Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
So 24 hours on and things are just a little calmer. We have recovered. Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, are sitting in exactly the same place as we were yesterday after the raw emotional press conference of Andy Murray. But I don't know about you, Catherine. I'm feeling a little bit more relaxed now. How about you?
After your 2.5 hours sleep.
Yeah, that's really refreshed me. I feel great now. But yes, it's been quite a 24 hours with reaction, obviously, to Andy Murray's announcement that he's planning to retire after Wimbledon, if not before. And the tennis world has gone berserk. Catherine obviously detailed some of the reaction from Juan Martín Del Potro in yesterday's show. But given we are the Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph, I think it is high time that we speak to The Telegraph's tennis correspondent, Mr. Simon Briggs. Hello, Simon.
Hi, welcome to Australia.
Thank you. You've had a busy few days, I think it's fair to say, particularly yesterday.
Yeah, that was right. The only good thing from the point of view of a working hack was that he announced it at 11 a.m. So I did get to bed at 2 a.m. the following morning, which wasn't that bad. I mean, I have many later nights than that out here. If it had happened at, let's say, 6, I don't think, in the evening, I mean, I don't think any of us would have slept at all.
That was occurring to me yesterday from a sort of really potentially boring procedural journalistic point of view. It almost felt, sort of witnessing you all, the writers yesterday, it almost felt a little bit old school in that, okay, yes, online stories had to be filed immediately.
Well, we hit the final edition.
Did you hit
everyone hit the final edition from the presser that was at 11 a.m. That's midnight in the UK, so most papers close their production at maybe 1 a.m. so there was time to get in the final edition.
But then there was kind of suspended animation.
Yeah, then everyone's in bed for 6 or 8 hours, whatever. But you've got most papers now would have somebody in New York or in Sydney who has a capacity to put online stuff up. So I did write a comment piece, which I filed sort of 5 a.m. or something, British time, and there was a guy in Sydney who put it up for me.
All right, so forget everything I just said. No suspended animation whatsoever.
But
just
it's not really hot ink anymore.
Continuous animation.
But you did then get your half an hour, didn't you, with Andy Murray straight after that press conference? And
well, there was actually a useful gap that we could file because he went to do broadcasting.
Yeah.
It's actually perfect.
So you're learning about the mechanics here on the Tennis Podcast of how it all works behind the scenes with Simon's writing for The Telegraph. And what came out of it was a very detailed, emotive again, but more detailed accounts from Andy Murray of exactly why he's taken the decision he has. Just give us an insight. And Catherine was explaining to us yesterday what his body language was like in her interview. What was he like with you guys?
Very relaxed. I mean, we haven't actually had a sit down with him. I don't think we've had one since 2017 in that way, because we had the infamous Brisbane outing.
This was a year ago when you all came out to Brisbane to talk about and cover Andy Murray's comeback, didn't you? And then that comeback didn't happen, and then he gave you all the slip.
That's right, and then he wasn't happy with our pieces.
And no one feels bitter about it at all.
No, we're all right about that.
And so we didn't speak to him for a while, but I mean, we spoke to him. We just didn't have kind of like as much time.
Does it feel to you? It feels to me, 24 hours on. Not, I certainly don't feel as though we got it wrong in any way yesterday in the podcast. I still feel as I felt then on the whole about what he said. But having heard Andy Roddick this morning on Five Live, we had him on our show. talking about how he feels that Andy Murray just needs to give this some time now, not make a decision about his career, still keep alive this chance of getting to Wimbledon in June, and that he feels that that is doable. And talking to you guys since then as well, Simon, it feels to me as though maybe we're not as cast iron sure that Andy Murray's going to retire tomorrow.
But how realistically to us who follow the tennis tour day, and I mean, how relevant is it? It's still, you know, Andy Murray as a competitor, it's over. That's what he told us yesterday. What we're talking about is whether he'll be at Wimbledon for some kind of ceremonial.
No, of course.
I think he will have that in some capacity, whether it's doubles with Jamie or Wimbledon lay on like a charity exhibition or something, or whether he gets a wild card into the main draw. One of those things may well happen, but for me, I'm sure it's obviously of significance to Andy, but for me, I don't find it that's an addendum to the story.
Well, it is, but I thought this was it. I thought there's no way he's going to play it again beyond Monday.
But then if you read the quotes, he's definitely left some wriggle room, particularly, I would say, in the time that he spent with us, even more so than in the emotional on-TV bit that probably most people have seen now. The bit with us, he repeatedly said that people who have resurfacing, so this is the next procedure, I don't know if you've gone into this in detail, what he's going to have. Did he speak about this much yesterday? He's going to have, as I understand it, a metal cap placed on the top of his femoral head and a metal lining.
Could you not go into too much detail? Because this is a procedure that I've been told that I require.
Is it?
Do you?
Yeah.
So what does it feel like?
I mean, not urgently, because, you know, I'm not required to play any Grand Slam tournaments imminently.
What, exactly the same?
Possibly. I mean...
No, but is the injury the same?
I don't know, because he's not exactly... Has he given us a medical term for his diagnosis?
No, he hasn't.
No.
The Telegraph's had a good go at it.
Basically, the socket doesn't fit right into the femoral head doesn't fit right in the socket.
Ew.
Anyway.
Sounds horrible.
Anyway, if we could sort of limit the gruesome words.
What's it feel like? This injury?
Well, I'm fine. It's just it's something that's not getting any better. You know, it's a base level of wrong. Mm. I'm not in agony the way he is, but I've never pushed my body to even once to what he pushes his body to every single day. So,
right.
But it's constant awareness that it's just not right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, folks, we are going to talk about other tennis players today here on the Tennis Podcast, but, you know, it does still feel like the main story in town. The reaction of everybody, Simon, has been quite extraordinary, hasn't it? Really, he's the first one, isn't he, of the group, that the era that is going to call it a day. Why are you smiling?
I'm waiting for like, you know the Bateman cartoon thing, the man who... and I'm waiting for the man who said something mean about Andy Murray on social media, you know, it's like the entire universe has just deluged him with so much love. And
it's
really nice to see. No, I think he deserves it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm having a go at it myself. I think the only reason I'm whinging is because I'm trying to do my own version for the Sunday Telegraph now. And I'm like, you've said it all. What's left?
Is that a problem for you all? Because this story is going to keep on running. It's so big. It's not going to go anywhere. I'm sure there'll be developments and comments that'll freshen it up. But does there ever reach a stage where you just like there are no words that haven't yet been said, and yet my editor is asking for 1,000 of them?
Well, I mean, I'm sure I've said 100 times on the podcast. You know, Andy Murray correspondent is a line that I've used about myself a lot, as opposed to tennis correspondent. You know, that's obviously, I'm about to be made redundant from that post one way or another. But the point is that if you're going to be writing about one person for the majority of your working life, thank God it's someone as interesting as him. I mean, there's a few other tennis players in British history who've done very well. I'm not going to name any names here, but I think we would have struggled to mine, you know, like, or I would have, I've been doing this for 8 years, I would have struggled to mine 8 years worth of content from them. But he is somebody who is endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, well, he certainly is that.
Hey, can I inject an extra bit of life into the story?
Sure.
I spoke to Nick Kyrgios earlier.
Oh, yeah.
As we all did, and he had plenty to say in the press conference, but he did a couple of questions for me specifically on Andy Murray, and among other really quite eloquent words of tribute, he and interestingly, he in particular picked up on his support for the WTA, and he said, you know, I'd like to sort of pick up the baton from him on that, you know, something I feel strongly about as well, etc., etc. But anyway, after a tip off from David, I had always planned to ask him the coaching question, but he led me there. At the end of his second answer, I can't remember exactly how, but he had this twinkle in his eye and a smile on his face. He sort of said, I'm sure I'll be back in some sort of capacity, with quite a knowing look on his face. And I was like, right, well, you've led me right there, Nick. Andy said he might want a coach one day. You are without a coach, position vacant. What do you think? And he said, I'm not sure he's ready for me yet, but I'm well up for it when he is.
Could you imagine?
That would be just belting, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it just?
And I could go back to my old job again.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just play fantasy tennis. What would it be like if Andy Murray coached Nick Kyrgios? Could he do it? Could he be the difference maker?
I think in the contract it would have to say, I'm taking this job on the basis that you submit to these standards of professionalism.
Right.
And I think Nick's aware that that is something that's lacking in the way he approaches his tennis.
He was hilarious.
But he's. But I also think he's kind of waiting for somebody to unlock him.
So, I mean, when Lendl came in, he got Andy to do something that Andy knew he needed to do but didn't want to do, which is to stop counterpunching and be the boss. So Andy would then almost be fulfilling a slightly comparable role of getting Kyrgios to do something he knows he needs to do but doesn't want to do, which is go to the gym.
Yeah, take him to Miami and do all that.
Oh, yeah,
that'd be good.
Get Nick Kyrgios on the Versa climber.
Kyrgios, we did say a couple of weeks ago that we were not going to talk about Nick Kyrgios until he started justifying it.
After that buoyant Nick Kyrgios press conference and the wonderful quotes he gave about Andy Murray and this little feature he did for Eurosport Digital about they asked him to give three tips on how to do a tweener. His first tip was believe in yourself, and I'm thinking, Nick, there is no level of belief that could make me perform a tweener. The second one was something Tennessee, and the third one was the strut away after you've performed the tweener. He said that's as big a part of it as anything else. I'm thinking, great, Nick Kyrgios is in foot. Like, somehow then I'm looking at the draw sheet doing in my predictions and my hand is hovering over the Nick Kyrgios in the quarterfinals line. I'm thinking, it's happened again. He's reeled me in.
We sat down on the front row of the press conference for the Nick Kyrgios interview, and I was done with him. I've had him. I've had enough. And within 4 minutes, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, I love this guy. I can't help it. Andy Murray has been scheduled to play Roberto Bautista Agut on the Melbourne Arena, which is the old Hisense Arena, which is the old Vodafone Arena, for those that you go way back. Basically, it's the court number three at this tournament these days, isn't it? Behind the Margaret Court Arena, officially anyway, and the Rod Laver Arena. It's a ground pass, effectively. You can just come and get your seats as you please. What do you think about that scheduling? We were talking about it on the podcast yesterday, and I am quite surprised that Andy Murray is not on the Rod Laver Arena.
But I think, and I can't prove it, but I think they've asked him.
I know they certainly have asked him.
But I think that's what he wanted.
But yeah, Matt and I were talking about this earlier, and it seemed like such a win-win-win-win for the tournament to put Andy Murray on first on the Rod Laver Arena. It's a great opportunity to head off all the potential criticism of always putting Federer on the night session on RLA. You know, perfect reason not to do so. You've got it out of the way early on. You can always say, look, he didn't get every night session on Rod Laver Arena. It just seemed like, you know, it all would work out. And that leads me to think that Simon is probably right.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
You should assume that anyway. Roger is he playing Night Session? I haven't even looked.
He is.
So they didn't have the kind of reflexive, like, we'll stick him on on 11 a.m. just to kind of get out of the criticism.
And it's Nadal that's day session.
Yeah, he's in the afternoon. Yeah. And it's going to be how hot?
35 degrees.
I mean, Nadal won't care, probably, will he? I mean, he'll probably think, oh, this is great. But that's hot.
He's got a new serve.
He has got a new serve. You asked him about his new serve in the press conference, didn't
you? He said, you've got to keep fresh, or what was the phrase?
Yeah, he said, you've got to feel... Didn't he say you've got to feel alive?
Got to feel alive, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
that's
a very philosophical
almost in higher
comment.
And lower vibrations territory.
Yeah.
Did he talk about telekinesis at all?
No,
that's Novak, isn't it? Yeah.
But he did.
You know, it obviously works.
In offering his reasons, I mean, we didn't get a chance to do a follow-up question because I really wanted to know ultimately: have you done it to take pressure off a part of your body, or is it just tactical? Now, my understanding. Is from Matt is that he has done this for a tactical reason to try to shorten points, which by relation means that he is trying to take pressure off his body.
But do you just mean tactical reason to serve better?
Well, yeah, but not to have to go into such long rallies, and therefore you do take pressure off your body, don't you?
Yeah, but. I mean, you just want to serve as well as you can, right?
Well, yeah, you do.
Is it a better serve, Simon?
Well, we don't know. I mean, that surely is an unknowable question.
Neither are we qualified to know. But we
I mean, as he says, he hasn't even tried it in a match yet. I mean, it's quite baffling, isn't it? Here we've got the world's number two player. He's coming into the Australian Open with a serve he hasn't played with in a match.
Hmm.
I mean,
I just don't
it's
think
Rafa.
You do that. I just don't think you do that unless you need to.
Yeah. Wish I'd asked that follow-up now.
Oh. But the thing was, it was actually really hard to get questions in because I wanted to get back in and ask my political question, which I asked to everybody,
right.
And I couldn't get back in. I was waving at Kirsten, going, bonk. It's like, I want another one.
And that's what you were doing.
And she wouldn't give me another one. And because he was answering everything very slowly and at enormous length, there only were about six or seven questions. Then there was 4 minutes of Spanish, and then it was James Duckworth. I'm like, couldn't you give me 5 minutes more, Rafa? I'm sorry, that's very rude to James Duckworth. Is he retiring or something?
James Duckworth?
Don't think so.
Why was he in the main room?
James.
Anyway, he's playing
somebody
notable.
You've lost to a guy that is.
He's playing Nadal. So there we are.
Is he playing Nadal? But
that's
come on, we could have 5 minutes more, Rafa, and the best world to James Duckworth, top chap, but.
He's a home hope.
He's not really, is he?
There we are. Let's get on to it. You talked about the politics. What did you want to ask Rafael Nadal that you
tennis news.
Didn't get a chance to ask?
There is a debate going on. The Player Council are meeting tonight to decide whether they are going to support Chris Kermode's contract renewal as President and Chief Executive of the ATP. And I wanted to ask Rafa what his view was on whether Chris should be renewed.
Right. I mean, look, I'll get this out on the table. People probably know. I know Chris Kermode pretty well from his time at Queen's as the tournament director. He's somebody I have a lot of time for. Why would anybody not want him to be leading the ATP?
Well, there's a pretty strong faction in the Player Council that want a new CEO. And there was a rather extraordinary letter, which I published some of on the Telegraph website today. Couldn't get anything in the paper because it's a bit busy.
It's Andy Murray-centric.
In fact, we had a pullout. I didn't realise we had a pullout until Clipshare, which is a little programme that we can use to read all the papers back home, came up at 4 a.m. I was like, oh, what? We had a... Okay. Anyway...
More I'm getting, newspaper mechanics.
I'm getting
your words
distracted.
The pullout.
Oh no! I mean, I was two pieces, and Paul Hayward wrote the first spread, and we had a piece from Ollie Brown.
Go and have a read, folks.
It's
all great
Brzezinski.
Stuff. Right.
Anyway, how did I get onto that?
I don't know.
Politics.
Yes, you couldn't get your politics.
I couldn't get my politics space into the paper. It's only online. But anyway, Vasek Pospisil sent a letter to the players ranked 50 to 100. The reason why he did that is because he's the representative of players ranked 50 to 100. And he said some extraordinary things, like he was claiming that because there's 50% of the profits in the NFL go back to the players, that should happen in tennis, the Grand Slam should be paying that much money to the players. He was also saying that the ATP Tour is biased in the interest of the tournament. And he said that the books needed to be opened so that they could see the money that the tournaments are making and that they can't be swindled. And to my understanding, Chris actually did get a deal through very recently in which the Masters tournaments are going to open their books and will henceforth be doing a profit share type payment rather than having to just pull a number out of the air. So I don't quite see the... It was a really passionate letter, wasn't it?
It was really well articulated, and I think there are some really strong arguments in there. But I think what he's arguing for is a fundamental change of structure of the ATP.
He's asking for a players' union, yeah, really, isn't he?
Which is has what Novak suggested here a year ago, and Novak is the chairman of the Player Council. So these guys are clearly... have a fundamental philosophical opposition to the way the tour is set up. Now, it's definitely true that the ATP is a very peculiar body. It's 50% tournament, 50% players, so two groups who naturally are tugging in totally opposite directions, with the president as the seventh man on a seventh-man board, so three tournament representatives, three player representatives, and he's trying to sort of guide the whole ship when you've got an internal clash down the middle. But it's a big deal to try and totally rip up an organisation which is not always perfect, but at the same time,
but that's
it exists.
That is what they're arguing for, yeah, really. They're arguing for it to be... there is a fundamental conflict of interest at its heart, and by definition of the structure, the chief executive's role is to navigate the political minefield of that conflict of interest. And I think, by and large, he's actually done an extraordinarily good job of doing that, because my perception is that he's always been viewed as quite a... player friendly CEO. So yeah.
Situation is that the tournaments are the ones who are really upset, because it looks like that this month, when the vote is going to be taken on the ATP board level, it's not really singing off into the microphone, is it?
There are people out there that love the admin section.
I just know that I'm the political correspondent.
Yes,
that's my new job title now, that I can't be the Andy Murray correspondent. So the board are going to have to vote on whether to renew Chris in the tournaments. They're very unhappy at the prospect that Chris might be ousted by the players. And let's say that you feel that the ATP is constituted in a non-viable way. Does that still mean that you sack the CEO for that reason? I mean, there's a lot more to it. There's personalities, there's the extra factor of Justin Gimelstob being the board member... who seems to be the most influential...
Who has travelled...
on the ATP board.
As you reported, who has travelled to Melbourne for this meeting.
He flew in from Los Angeles this morning.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
and he has been in the news, most specifically in your newspaper's columns. In fact, I think he was on the front page of the sports section last month. Simon, we haven't spoken about Justin Gimelstob. You've been reporting a lot about him recently. Explain why he is relevant in the tennis world for people maybe that don't follow it that well.
Well, for one reason, I mean, he would be possibly the leading candidate to replace Chris if Chris was ousted, if he wasn't facing a charge of aggravated assault, which is going to be heard in a Los Angeles court on January the 31st. So that's an influential guy. I mean, I think a lot of people would have felt that the Telegraph ran a lot about somebody who's not massively famous in the UK, and I can understand that point of view, but I think what's happening here now with Novak's going to be asked about the whole ATP political situation tomorrow, Roger will be asked about it, it's going to become, you know, a reasonably high profile talking point. I think it demonstrates that he is a big player, and the fact that he has been charged with a felony is significant.
Are you surprised that he's here, given that that is hanging over his head at the moment, and that he's here in his board capacity?
I'm surprised that he has insisted on remaining an active board member when he is awaiting trial. I don't think it's a good look. I don't think it necessarily encourages people around the sport to think well of him. And I don't think it reflects particularly well on the sport either that the board and the player council have both consented to him going ahead on that front.
Mm. It's a difficult one, isn't it, for us to talk about because it's a pending trial. But he is a guy that wields an awful lot of control, an awful lot of hard power in terms of position on the board and soft power in tennis.
He's a commentator, isn't he?
Commentator, coach of John Isner. I believe he's more involved with the Tennis Channel than that, isn't he? I believe he's on the board of that or involved some way. You know, his colleague at the Tennis Channel, David Eggers, he's on the ATP board as well.
He's actually taken leave of absence from his role at Tennis Channel for now. He stepped down there temporarily while these charges are heard.
But, I mean, he wields an awful lot of influence in an awful lot of corners of the sport, you know, beyond the headline segments. And, it's not a good look. It's even without the outcome of that trial, the current situation is uncomfortable.
Mm. So, big political shenanigans due to take place tonight. So we will bring you up to date. When do you think we'll hear something about those, Simon? We'll see if we can get word to you on the tennis podcast.
It's quite complicated. Inevitably, there's a sort of two-stage process with the player council coming to their conclusions, or at least having their discussion tonight, and then the actual vote will be done by the board. So the three player representatives and the three tournament representatives at some point in January. So there's a fair way to go on this, and I'm going to be boring people silly with it for weeks to come.
And we look forward to being bored silly. I mean, I'm enjoying it anyway. So Simon, you are going to go off and write and do your other work. We're not going to have you on tomorrow, so what have you got to tell us about what's going to happen this fortnight?
Have you done your predictions?
He's going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm rubbish at predictions. Well, everyone knows that.
Too bad.
My excuse is that I'm usually buried under thousands of words.
Yes, that's right.
Thousands of words about tennis that should inform your predictions.
It's usually not about forehands and backhands if I'm doing my job well enough.
It's going to be a Brit fest on Monday. We've got Kyle Edmund playing in the afternoon on the new Melbourne Arena, as it's called, followed by Andy Murray. And there's Harriet Dart, his opening play on Rod Laver Arena against Maria Sharapova. It's all happening.
Yeah, I mean, we've got eight Britons. I can tell you eight Britons at the Australian Open for the first year since 1988.
Goodness.
How many of them will we have on Thursday?
It does look a little that way. But, I mean, Cameron Norrie's coming in form. Dan Evans, so pleased to see him qualify. And how fit does he look?
Yeah,
how motivated does he seem? How brilliant is he to watch? Love it. You know, it's been a total highlight. I actually wasted time I should have been spending writing by watching the last set and a half, I think it was, of the match he played against Rodionov. And that was seriously good tennis. I mean, actually, Rodionov to me looks like he could be a pretty good player. He's 19, 200 in the world. Anyway, yeah, really excited about Evo's comeback. And then we've got Katie Bolter.
Yeah.
And obviously, Kyle Edmund, who has a horrible first round draw, as you mentioned.
Thomas Burdick. Oh.
Directly before Andy Murray, yeah, on the Melbourne Arena.
It's going to be an interesting afternoon. We're going to come back with another tennis podcast tomorrow because we realise we haven't dissected the draw for you yet, which we are going to do. We are also going to have with us Grad Matt. He's here, folks, and he is ready to rumble here on the tennis podcast. We can't wait. I am a coiled spring waiting to unleash our Kickstarter-backed Grad Matt, who is here. It's all thanks to you, folks, because you backed us to the hilt. And we haven't finished yet, I should add. Still a couple of days to go in our Kickstarter, so you can still introduce the show. You can still enter our predictions competition, take on Catherine and myself and Grad Matt and Simon Briggs, if we can twist his arm, and many, many more. You can get it your name on our backers page, and it does all help because we're trying to make this show as good as we possibly can, produce as many of them as we can, and we hope you enjoy that process. So a couple of days left on our Kickstarter. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio the Dog. Check out his Instagram page. My goodness. Catherine's face is just lit up at the mere thought of Rio the Dog. Simon, lovely to have you with us. Hope we speak to you again later in the week.
Hope so.
Yeah, me too. Grad Matt's going to be back tomorrow. Catherine, can you wait? She's so excited. I'm excited, aren't you?
Bet. I mean, he is sat next to me at the moment, yeah, so...
I'm not letting him on today. Sorry, folks, you're going to have to wait another day.
He's got jet lag.
Grad Matt will be with you tomorrow on the Tennis Podcast, and we will be daily throughout the fortnight. I can't even get my words out.
Daily.
I'm that excited. So we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.